Well, the Nets are officially in rebuild mode. Kevin Durant's off to the Phoenix Suns. Russell Westbrook's off to the Utah Jazz. There's heaps to digest on this special edition of 3rd and 5. Welcome into, I guess we'll call this episode 59, second episode this week, and a lot's happened since the last time we recorded a podcast. It's been a whirlwind NBA trade deadline, and the biggest news broke at about 1 a.m. New York time last night, or while I was asleep, so I don't actually know, but Kevin Durant being traded to the Phoenix Suns, what's the initial reaction to that?
Well, I'm currently lying in bed sick right now, so it almost felt like a bit of a fever dream, to be honest. I think I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. I think it's definitely the biggest bust in NBA history. Absolutely. The fact that the Nets, not that long ago, had James Harden, Kevin Durant, and Kyrie Irving all on the team, and now they have none, and no championships to show for it, and one playoff series win, which is the same as the Knicks in that same time, like, just shows how disappointing it is. So, obviously, as a Nets fan, it's pretty crushing. I don't think they necessarily got the best deal either for KD, and the Suns obviously get considerably better.
Do you think, interesting you sort of mentioned the Knicks there. From memory, the Knicks were very close to getting KD and Kyrie back then, right? Like, in another world, it could have been the Knicks and it would have been their problem. And I kind of feel like now, looking at the team that the Nets have, and given there was no further trades, which I think surprised most of us after the KD one, it kind of looks like a fairly similar inability side to the Nets team that before Kyrie and KD came over. Would you agree with that? The 2018 team.
Like, just looking at the Nets, like, you just kind of, I mean, I know you're probably both going to disagree with this in a pretty strong way, but and obviously I'm pretty upset at the situation that it's in. But I mean, the Nets are probably one of the worst run organizations in the NBA. The fact that they've had three superstars all request trades within 18 months. Say something. The fact that they're all still friends even after those people have left, like Harden and KD, you know, there's been, you know, images of them talking and stuff like that. There is something wrong in the front office or going on in the background with the Nets, and we'll find out about it one day for sure. But, you know, the fact that this has happened is beyond a joke.
I actually think
a lot of it's just player power, really.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Like, I actually think I put a lot of blame, or a lot of not. I mean, there's lots of people you could finger point here, but I actually think KD deserves a fair bit of the flack. As much about being a leader, you know, he was number one guy. He's the top 20 player of all time in this team, and even just to try and, you know, I think he just tries to be mates with these guys too much. Like, he did not ever, through all of the Kyrie shit that we've had to sort of endure during, you know, Kyrie's stint here in Brooklyn, KD just always kept that very separate. You know, he never tried to kind of, I don't know, just try and tell him to sort of keep his head down and focus on the team and winning. So I feel, KD was also instrumental. I believe that, I think came out that he was on FaceTime with Harden, trying to get Harden into the, so like, the haul of picks and players that we gave to get Harden, which is to me what really crippled the Nets, and we're trying to sort of climb out of that. You know, again, that's KD was huge in that. So it is the player power. And I don't think it kind of made me think.
Completely agree with that, though, to be honest. Like, yeah, like, I mean, like, KD definitely had a hand in all these things. But the top four players with the most points per game in Nets franchise history. Number one, Kevin Durant at 29. Number two, Kyrie, 27.1. Number three, Vince Carter, 23.6. And then number four, James Harden, 23.4.
How many games did they play together?
Well, I mean, like, that's injuries and stuff like that. But, I mean, ignoring that, they're all excellent players as an organization. Like, it's just an absolute joke that they have nothing to show for that. And I mean, like, going back to the Kyrie stuff, obviously this year, and sharing the anti-Semitic video, like, is awful. But I mean, like, and then his, like, unexplained absence of 2 weeks, you know, two or three years ago, but what else has he done?
Yeah, well, I would never, the COVID thing's like, yeah, it's just unlucky that he was, from his perspective, that he was in New York. I mean, cool. That obviously took a lot. That was in a situation where I think the Nets would have been in a far better position had he just, if he was available. But that's, yeah.
100%, 100%. And it's like, there's tons of other NBA players that aren't vaccinated. It's just the fact that, unfortunately, like, we were in New York, and unfortunately, baseball season took a while to come around, and that was
what pressure. But that's also that's you certainly couldn't finger point at you know, management or front office for that issue.
Not particularly, but I think, like, you know, just the players that they've built around it, you know, like, I mean, even today after the trade deadline, I expected something. Like, looking at our team now, like, I'm happy we've got Mikal Bridges. Like, that's great. That fills me with joy. I'm glad we've still got Nick Claxton on the team. Why the hell did we still have Seth Curry, who's a free agent at the end of the season, Patty Mills, Joe Harris? You know, like, why have we got these guys still on the roster? Like, it makes no sense.
Well, it's hard. I mean, you've got to, like, find the right deal out there. There are a lot of... I thought it was one of the bigger trade deadlines we've seen, but it wasn't that active. Like, there weren't a lot of teams. There are a lot of teams that I thought could have done more that didn't really do that much.
And a lot of teams that have been talked about.
I don't know what the reason for that. Yeah.
A lot of teams talked about, right? Bulls and Raptors in particular were like, you know, they were everywhere in terms of movement and, you know, these players, and very little.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was just that the earthquake came too close to the deadline and Kevin Durant getting moved, and that sort of changed everything. And, you know, the Nets were thinking about being buyers up until, you know, 24 hours ago, and then suddenly they're in sell mode and they don't have time to manufacture deals. But, yeah, I mean, I would agree. It's disappointing because now you're at a point where Seth Curry, you know, you had a chance to get some a few draft picks out of that and feel a little bit better about the James Harden trade there, but that won't be happening now.
But do you think as well, like the Seth Curry, using Seth Curry, he's definitely, like, he's had a few injury niggles. He's certainly not probably been as productive as maybe last season or in the past. Like, maybe where you would have expected if some interest, maybe people were like, oh, well, yeah, we won't take it. I'm sure we should be able to find someone, but, you know, maybe there just wasn't much, you know, or, you know, the buyers in the market weren't that keen.
No, I mean, if you can get Seth Curry for a second round pick, like, you know, and you're a team like the Clippers or, you know, one of those teams that, you know, kind of is struggling on the West and, you know, sitting in that bubble, you do it. Like, I don't know why he's still on the team.
Yeah.
I really don't.
But if you're Sean Marks and you give players away for 20 cents on the dollar, then it hampers you in negotiations over the summer and in the future, because you've set a precedent for certain deals. So I can see why he doesn't want to just give guys away. But yeah, I mean, it's disappointing because once you wave the white flag with Kevin Durant, you are pretty much saying, like, you should just about listen to offers for anyone and see if anyone blows you away for any of the players. The interesting thing, I think, for the, you know, focusing this on the Nets still, is they're, I think we touched on it just briefly there, Dave, like, they've got a, it's a good, not great team. It's a team that's probably going to finish in the 6 to 10 seed range, I think, and probably would, if they were going into the season, would probably be in line to finish about there with this roster as is. It's not just the fact that they're already up that way. So I think, you know, and this is the way they're going to have to rebuild, because the Rockets own all their drafts for the next 3 or 4 years, I think. So this is the way they're going to have to rebuild, is try and get better stuff out of these players and you know, clear some salary cap room, and then potentially in a couple of years try and bring in a free agent or shift some of those long term draft picks that they've now got from Dallas and Phoenix and bring in a star eventually. But it's going to be a fun side to watch.
It's literally like, and that's what I was trying to link it to. Like, it's very similar to the Nets 2018, and that team kind of really started to build a culture, and you know, they're probably like a 40-ish win team. And then they obviously, to be able to go to that next level, they needed stars, KD, Kyrie. So that's what, you know, it could be 2-3 years away, but that's literally, it could just be a repeat of what we've seen. I mean, they might be a little bit cautious about exactly how they do it, but given they've already been burned once, but that's what I could see happening.
Looking at all of this,
that roster attracted Kevin Durant to the Brooklyn Nets, and that situation attracted him to the Nets.
And no, it didn't. I don't think that is not correct. Kyrie Irving, the only reason KD put on a Nets jersey is because Kyrie Irving convinced him to come here instead of going to the Knicks.
No, yeah, but the fact that they had an exciting young roster was certainly a big part of why those two wanted to come here. That's exactly why they chose. That's why they wanted to come to Brooklyn. Because they had all these young exciting players that they could build around. And you know, they always knew that the first year was going to be tricky because Kevin Durant was injured. But there was tons of potential in this roster, and they had plenty of cap space at the time as well. And they're going to have that back again. The thing that really hamstrung this team was the James Harden trade, and then the return on James Harden not that long later, which has turned into a terrible trade for the Nets because Ben Simmons, the major piece of that, is terrible. And that's what's really, you know, hamstrung them moving forward. But I think there's definitely parallels you can draw between that 2018 team and what this roster looks like moving forward.
I don't know. I'm just looking at this and I'm just like looking down our current roster and I'm like, we all knew this. We'd all spoken about this, that our massive gap was bigs. We did nothing with that. Like, we haven't fixed that problem. We've got all these extra guys.
Because it's like we're not.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I definitely get the who cares like comment, but like, if that's true, why is Joe Harris still there? Why is Seth Curry still on the team if we don't care? Like, and we're trying to rebuild and do all that stuff. We also have a spare roster spot. Like, none of this makes sense. So I just think it's incredibly mismanaged. Like, the KD trade, I think what it is, like, we'll deal with it. It is what it is. Getting back what we got, I think, in the situation with how much time we did. But the fact that, like, we gave Kyrie the Mavs when we could have, you know, if we were just going to go around and blow this all up and send KD to Phoenix, why the fuck didn't we take those two first round picks from LA? Like, it's just petty shit if we didn't send Kyrie to LA because destination.
Hindsight's easy. I don't think when they did that Kyrie deal, they were thinking about selling KD. I'd be pretty confident in saying that. So it's hindsight. You know, yeah, you're saying that is fair, but it's not how it went down.
And I think the Kyrie trade, by all accounts, it just completely, the trade request just blindsided everyone in the organization, including Kevin Durant. And so I think Kevin Durant was pretty bought in on this season, particularly given how well they were playing up until his injury, and even at times after his injury. And so I think he was pretty bought in until then. I don't think Kevin Durant was thinking about Phoenix a week ago. I don't think it was even on his radar a week ago. And certainly no one in the Nets front office. And then that trade came through. And then obviously there was a few days, I think, presumably, of conversations where then Durant was like, well, if you can get me someone that, you know, is going to set me up for a title, then sure. But, you know, looking around, who are the Nets really going to get? It sounded like the Pascal Siakam trade was a step too far because they wanted too much. It sounded like, you know, it might be OG Anunoby or Fred VanVleet or whatever his name is, Fred VanVleet. And Kevin Durant probably looked at that and said, nah, it's not enough. And that's when things started moving on towards Phoenix. And so I think they've really been blindsided for the second deadline in a row, really, going back to James Harden last year. So it's disappointing that they've had to do things on the fly. But I would suspect that kind of explains why the roster now looks like a kind of like mismatch of players with too many wings and no centers and all. Like it's the roster's completely misbalanced, as you say, Thwaites. Like it does look like a roster that's been put together in 48 hours, which it kind of has been.
Yeah, I mean, There was reports coming out this afternoon as well that apparently that conversation earlier in the year that, you know, if things weren't working out, that, you know, the Nets and KD would work together to send him to his preferred destination of Phoenix. So, you know,
they were working out. Things were working out. This is the hardest thing, I think, about it is, like, things were working out, or it seemed that way. It was just the guy got injured. It was so unfortunate. And
do you want to hear something that'll make your blood boil? I think looking back on it, this is the thing that I think like you both will be frustrated with as much as I am with here. Back in October, there was a deal in place to send Ben Simmons to Utah, Donovan Mitchell to Miami, and Bam Adebayo to Brooklyn, and Brooklyn torpedoed the deal. Obviously, hindsight's
20/20. Who reported that? That seems almost too good to be true.
It does. I think there was obviously a pick or something attached to that, just which...
I mean, what the thing? Yeah, I actually have never heard that possible trade. But
who reported that?
I would love to have Bam.
Give me 2 seconds.
Just why? That I mean, this is something we talked about on the pod probably about a month ago. I think I mentioned that the Phoenix Suns' new owner is at Ishbia. You know, brand new, just came in. I think he intentionally made sure he was in ownership, or the deal for the ownership went through so he could actually be active in this deadline. And, you know, new owner, that's like, you want to make a splash, right? I think that's what we talked about. You know, you want to make a, you know, people stand up. And like, I had a look at the biggest trades in the 21st century and going through all the names, I found a list off ESPN. I'd say the only one that even rivals this in terms of being a top, because top 20, I'm putting Durant as a top 20 player of all time, right? And if you go through the top 20 list, not that many of them have ever been traded. And I think the only one I can see from the list is Shaquille O'Neal, who got traded to the Heat. So I would say this is arguably the biggest trade in terms of just having how good of a player, like certainly pretty much in like since in the 21st century. Yeah. Because there's obviously been a big blockbuster trades, but it's been guys that are in the top 75, like a Harden or, you know, Iverson or whatever, but there's not been just that elite because generally they don't go for sale.
Well, that, and it's just so hard to like feel like you're getting value back for a player of that level. Like it's like, you know, yeah, they're so good that it's like, how can you possibly value that trade without gussing the entire other team? This was one of the things that held up the Durant trade in the summer, was that like, teams just felt like they were going to gut their roster to get this guy, and then they bring him in, but then they've got no other pieces around them.
And that was linked to the Rudy Gobert trade that kind of created this mini precedent that like Brooklyn was saying, well, this is what Rudy Gobert's getting. We've got top 20 player of all time. You're going to have to give more, and everyone is just like, that's just ridiculous. Held off, and so I feel like that's just a great example of that was just an outlier, and the rest of the market aren't going to react to that or kind of, you know, go along with that to be the precedent, which is kind of relevant to the whole Lamar Jackson to Sean Watson contract, which is for another discussion, but that's always been my argument as to why Lamar's moving on.
Yeah. No, it's right. So I agree with you. Like a lot of what you're saying, that, I mean, it's disappointing that, you know, this has gone this way and then they haven't been able to just throw a lot of these, you know, they sent Jay Crowder to the Bucks for a handful of second round picks, but it's disappointing the way this has played out, because it's really left the Nets and you know, if they're going to trade their two best players, they've sort of, it's kind of played out in the worst possible way, really, and left them in the lurch. But in terms of the Phoenix Suns now, are they the favourites for the NBA this year now?
They're not the favourites for me. Obviously, like, there's always two sides to every trade. Did the Nets get better? No. Are they going to be in a good position to succeed in the next 2 to 3 years, you know, like, and beyond? Absolutely. And you're definitely right with that side, Dave. You know, like, it's obviously just disappointing the way things have worked out. But looking at the Suns, absolutely. Like, the Suns look excellent. They've got DeAndre Ayton, who's a big man, and, you know, he just absolutely muscled the Nets and Claxton when he played the other night. They got a great floor general and Chris Paul, who, yes, he's aging. They've obviously got Devin Booker there as well. Now they've got KD. So excellent roster. Their depth, they will probably struggle a tiny bit, I think. For me, in the West, it's definitely accelerated them up the standings for sure. But I still think the Nuggets are the team to beat. I think it's the Suns aren't far off though, for sure.
Yeah, I think that I agree. I think it's Nuggets still slightly ahead, but I think the other two teams, as it stands, I don't know how the seedings will work and whether they'll. But you know, on ability, I think they're probably the finals, the Western Finals, if the seedings allow that. if I was to say now.
Yeah, I think this is a move. Like, the Suns just have to make this move with this window. Like, their window's probably only got two, three years left anyway. And that's probably if it goes really well. So they've kind of just, like, they're in a position where they've just got to make this trade if it's available for them. And I think that puts them in a wonderful position this year and in the next couple of years as well, I think.
How big would it be for your Chris Paul, eh? You must just be loving it. How long has he played in the league? I think he must be like 17 years or something. No, Chip, he must just have absolutely... I don't know if he's tweeted about it or anything, but he would have just absolutely loved the announcement.
Well, the other one I don't mind is that they also get TJ Warren, who is a very handy little role player, who I think is only going to get better this season as well. So that helps the depth, which is a little bit of a concern following the exit of Bridges Johnson. I mean, Crowder wasn't playing anyway, so that doesn't matter so much. But... yeah, I think you're right. So I think the Nuggets have looked really good this year, and that they still deserve to hold on to the one seed. But with Kyrie and KD out in the West now, the West is a lot tougher than it was a week ago. The other team that's really made some moves are the Lakers. We've obviously talked a ton about them in the last few months. They've got a lot better. They brought in Mo Bamba. They've sent Russell Westbrook to the Jazz. They've brought in D'Angelo Russell now. Their point guard, they sent Patrick Beverley to the Orlando Magic, lucky him. The Lakers, I don't think they're, you know, contending for the top of the West, but they're certainly stronger than they were pre-deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, there's probably two teams that I think made some pretty good moves on the West. You know, obviously not blockbuster moves, but moves to make them more competitive at least and definitely kind of cement them in a playoff spot. And one of them is definitely the Lakers. I mean, they had to get rid of Westbrook. I mean, that's definitely needed to happen. And they pulled in some great guys. Mo Bamba is going to be fantastic for that team. I'm really excited for him to be there. Obviously, D'Angelo Russell goes back to LA where he was first drafted. I think one of the funnier things on a day where I've been sick all day and obviously been pissed off about the whole KD thing was Pat Beverley. Pat Beverley tweeted out, can't wait to be reunited with D'Angelo Russell in LA. And then moments later, he realized he was part of the trade package and on his way to the Orlando Magic. So, and for Mo Bamba. So, definitely the Lakers got really good there. I think probably the sneaky one for me in the West for sure is probably the two smaller moves that I like. I like the Warriors moving on from James Wiseman. Obviously, number two overall pick a few years ago has been an absolute bust. The Hawks got Sadiq Bey, which has been good. But, you know, the Clippers, they got Eric Gordon, Bones Highland, and Mason Plumlee. They're definitely one of the favorite teams when you start talking about this Russell Westbrook buyout that most likely will happen at Utah. So they may get him, you know, to sign with the team for the rest of the year. So suddenly the Clippers look in a way better spot than they were, you know, 48 hours ago with the potential addition of a Westbrook that's coming off the bench as a floor general. You know, like, hey, that's the team to watch, I think. Obviously not as exciting as a Suns or a Nuggets, but, you know, can they get up to that fourth seed with a team like that? You know, third or fourth seed? Absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Getting rid of John Wall, I think it's a good move. He'll be sent back to the Rockets, but he won't play a game for the Rockets. He'll be bought out. Yeah, it sounds like Russell Westbrook wants to go to the Heat and the Clippers, and those are two contending sides that make a bit of sense for him, I think. And the Clippers make a ton of sense, really, as a buyout candidate, given the John Wall move now and stuff. I mean, you know, I wonder how Russell Westbrook's going to be perceived on the open market as a guy who will probably just go ring chasing and play on the veterans minimum for the rest of the year, given that he's already earned $47 million. But, you know, he's obviously been talked about a lot and not for a lot of good things over the last year or two. So I'm interested to see if a team like the Clippers with championship aspirations and with a pretty set roster and set culture feel like the idea of bringing in Westbrook, who still has something to give, I think, particularly off the bench, but also has a big personality, big ego, and there's a risk there to bringing in a guy like that, and whether they are, you know, are willing to take that risk.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's going to be a challenging time, but like, I think the kind of the headline that, you know, we all realize is that the West is just going to be an absolute fucking bloodbath. You know, it's like the power's definitely shifted, you know, to the West for sure with all these trades that have happened, because not only KD to the Suns is an amazing trade for the Suns, but you know, the other teams that just sat there and were like, oh shit, we kind of have to like start, you know, making some trades to help our roster compete, because otherwise KD and that team's just going to run all over you. And, you know,
the East, like obviously the Nets have gone out of contention, but you know, as long as the Bucks and the Celtics are still there, right? And I mean, the Bucks are struggling a little bit with Middleton's not been quite right for a lot of the year, but you know, if they can time their run right, they're still going to be, you know, you'd expect it to be the Bucks or the Celtics representing the East, and I'd still give them a decent crack at whoever gets through from the West. I just think the West is now a lot deeper, and you know, going to be hugely competitive and, you know, really exciting to watch. The East, I think, you know, the sort of the top teams, you probably put the 76ers up there as well, are sort of kind of pushing away from the middle of the pack. So there's probably not as many contenders, but I think the top teams there are still, you know, pretty close to that, you know, top of the NBA, arguably.
Yeah, I think the Bucks and the Celtics definitely look like the top two in the East now. I mean, the Bucks with Crowder, if they're fit, Crowder, Giannis, Drew Holiday and Middleton is their top four look really good. And Boston, question mark, how Jaylen Brown injured, unsure how long he's out for, but I presume he'll be back for the playoffs. And I think, I'm pretty confident it'll be a Boston Bucks Eastern Conference final.
Absolutely. And, you know, like those two were probably, apart from that 20 game stretch that the Nets had, those two were the teams to beat in the East from the beginning of the season. You know, that won't be surprising to either of us, but the 76ers, obviously, you know, were a team that did make a move. They moved on from Matisse Thybulle in a trade. Also, Boston did a trade. They traded with the Thunder to get Muscala. They're obviously a bench player there, but, you know, like it just shows that these Boston and Bucks teams have a lot of depth, and they have a lot of outstanding team players on their squads. Like, you are absolutely, I can agree 100%. Those two are the teams to beat still in the East. Most likely we'll see a conference final in there. Maybe Philadelphia can do it if Harden and Embiid are still playing absolutely lights out. But it just feels like they don't have as much depth as some of those top two teams.
Just to touch on something you said in passing earlier about the Warriors. So they moved on from James Wiseman, right? That's, I think, as a someone that doesn't want to see a dynasty and see the Warriors continue to dominate, if that, because they had that year where everyone was injured, right? And then so they basically tanked and got number two pick. The 2019 number two pick which was Wiseman that they picked. The year before the number two pick was Ja Morant. So just imagine if, like, so it's obviously just the way it fell and they obviously assessed him wrong, or he just wasn't as good as everyone expected. But just imagine if Ja Morant rookie contract was with the Warriors.
It's even worse than that. I think a better example is like in the draft year that year, I think directly behind them was LaMelo Ball. So it was Wiseman or Ball that they were
talking about getting.
So, yeah. You know, like that would have been a disaster and probably something that they'll regret. Obviously, it didn't cost them a championship because they got one last year. But, Gary Payton going back there is going to be absolutely great for that Warriors team for sure. You know, he left that Warriors team to go get his money in the Trailblazers. He didn't take a team-friendly deal and he's back there anyway and he got his money. So good on him.
Yeah, the way that they structure these sports in America, NBA and NFL in particular, like they do make it hard to kind of have these dynasties because of the way that the drafting system works and whatnot. But if you do draft really well, you can kind of keep that going by just getting, you know, picking very well, whether it's later in the draft or whatever. And they had their fortune to get number two, but it was a bust. So, yeah, I'm happy. But, you know, and as other teams in the West, they'll be glad that that's what's happened.
So I read something today.
Nick Claxton's a second round pick.
Yeah. So I read something today, and because I don't know about you both, but I just constantly sit there and just like, why is the NBA trade deadline always just absolutely nuts? Why are there always these things going on? So in the NFL, you can only trade first round picks 3 years ahead. In the NBA, you can do it 7, which is why you start seeing some of these big trades that go, over years and years and years, and that have long lasting implications. But going back to what you said, Si, I'm guessing you're talking about second round picks. Shit, we almost got 5 from the Bucks, which turned down to 3 because we're obviously reducing our cap hit. But I mean, I'm okay with those dart throws.
We literally can't even use all those picks, right? Like, at some point, we're just going to have too many drafts. We don't have enough roster spots for the players that we draft. I mean, it is fascinating in the NBA. I mean, you can't trade first round picks in back to back years, but then you can intertwine those with pick swaps. And so, with pick swaps and the number of draft picks you can hand out, they are able to just trade so many draft picks, which if you don't have the players on your roster, does allow you to pursue trades in a way that the NFL doesn't really. One more topic before we wrap things up, just circling back to the Nets. Obviously, we've got a number of Kiwi listeners. Sean Marks, Byron, do you let him take over this rebuild?
Oh, wow, this is a tough one. There's clearly something going on at the Nets. I don't know what it is. There's something going on behind closed doors that has made pretty much everyone that's walked out of this franchise shit on the franchise. Say they're glad to be out of there. They don't want to go back. So there's something going on. I don't know what that is. Yeah, but I mean, like, you know.
Spencer Dinwiddie's stoked to be back.
I think the Stokes would probably be in Brooklyn and in New York.
Well, the question is, like, have there been like players, sort of role players that have left, whether it's like Drummond that went to Chicago or any guys like that have kind of talked about toxic culture or like happy to be out? Or is it just, are we just talking about the big boys?
We're talking about Drummond. We're talking about Bruce Brown. We're talking about who was the guy that we bought in that Steve Nash used to play with back in the day, European. So, you know, like, it kind of, we haven't heard anything from like current players, that are still on the team, but it just feels like there's something there. I think at the end of the day, though,
Dragic, like, sounded like he got sick of all the just constant like headlines about off the court stuff and just wanted to play basketball.
Yeah.
Gone.
I was going to say, like, that's kind of the one nice thing that I sit there. And, you know, I'm sure you all feel like this as well, which is we can just get back to watching the Nets play basketball. We don't have, like, this massive weight on, you know, fans' shoulders, which is you've got KD, you've got Kyrie, you know, you used to have Harden win a championship. So I don't know about firing Marks necessarily. I mean, there has been organizational fuck-ups. I don't know who we blame, whether it's Joe Tsai for being too involved, Steve Nash, or Joe Tsai for letting KD like have his fingers all over it, because DeAndre Jordan, like all these other things, like there's been some critical mistakes there. It's just, I don't know whose fault it is, but somebody probably needs to fall on the sword at some point.
Yeah. And I sort of talked earlier about how I think KD had a big part in all of this and the player power, but I don't think, you know, if other teams are looking at this, I think we're going to continue to see this, you know, in years to come from franchises, because, you know, they're going to do everything they can. If they've got that star player, that guy that can take them to the promised land, they're going to kind of bend over backwards to kind of make sure that demands are met and everything, you know, to keep them happy and to kind of build around that. So, yeah, like one argument would be, well, actually, this might stop this whole player power issue, because other franchises are going to see how it just blew up in Brooklyn's face and was pretty poor, but I can't see it I can't see it stopping going forward in the near future.
Well, if you're offered Kevin Durant and Curry, like, you probably go and do that all again, what they did back
definitely
2019 season. Like, you take that chance. You've got to take that chance. You probably even do the James Harden trade again. I mean, I don't think, like, it was a they, in hindsight, they overpaid, but you take that chance, I think, when that's available. So it is tricky. The one thing I'll say with Marks is that he's done well at identifying fringe talent and getting the best out of them. You know, he did it when he built up that roster before Kevin Durant arrived. He's done it. You know, Cam Thomas was a late first round pick. Nick Claxton's a second round pick. He's found good talent. You know, where other teams did not. Yuta Watanabe is another one this year. So that's good. And the thing about, you know, Dwight, you just mentioned going back to watching the Nets just play basketball and having a basketball team to watch. One of the funnest Nets games I've been to recently was the other night against the Clippers, where they had none of their stars playing, and the expectations were low. It was just fun to watch the game. The Barclays Center was rocking because Cam Thomas was almost hitting a 50-point game. They almost knocked over the Clippers. It was a super fun game. And I think, you know, though I would love to have, you know, the superstars here and us competing for a championship, it is a lot of fun also to root for a side that has a bit more heart and hustle and it seems to be a bit more of a unit that's just focused on basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll completely agree with that Clippers comment. Like, I sat there with a smile on my face the entire game. It was great. You know, we lost it. Yeah. But, you know, like you said, it was fun.
Yeah.
I guess just before we wrap things up, though, there were two teams that didn't make any trades this window. One was the Cleveland Cavaliers and the other was the Chicago Bulls. Who are you guys thinking that are the biggest losers out of this? Because I've looked at these teams and kind of one of my hot takes in the week, which really didn't come in, was that DeRozan, Zach LaVine, or OG was going to be on the Nets. But I was actually kind of surprised to see that none of those guys were moved. John Collins wasn't moved from the Hawks. And it felt like potentially the KD trade may have torpedoed that. And maybe they were asking too much for those guys. You know, there was rumors even coming out today that OG was being linked to the Golden State Warriors. So they had somebody that could guard KD. But, I mean, if I'm looking at these teams, I think probably the biggest losers out of this are probably Miami Heat. You know, they were a team that's kind of just sat, you know, in and around that kind of fifth, sixth, seventh seed constantly throughout the season. And I thought they were going to make a bunch of bigger moves to really either make a push and just kind of jump full on in. But they haven't. And they're kind of sitting there with, you know, Chicago and Toronto as well, where it's these teams that they're not going to, you know, go right down and be in the Webinyana stakes, but also they're probably going to be in the play-in spot and then potentially just get bounced the first round. And for what?
I'm disappointed in the Heat as well. I mean, they were, I think, 4-9 to start the year. So they're now 30-25. They've actually been playing pretty well of late. And they're a team that, you know, went quite well in the playoffs last year and came pretty close to actually upsetting the Celtics. So I agree with you in that I think as things stand, they're probably just going to hover in that fifth, sixth seed spot and probably get bounced by Cleveland or Philadelphia in the first round. But yeah, I thought like with a few of the players that didn't get moved, that probably should have got moved, I'm sort of surprised that the Heat didn't make a push to try and, you know, push themselves up into those top four seeds potentially and have a real run at it this year because they do have the bones of a good roster there. I don't think Cleveland really needed to make too many moves. I think Cleveland's pretty comfortable with where they're at. Chicago, it's sort of like, I mean, I guess maybe they'll blow it up in the summer now. I don't know.
Yeah, I think as well, like you pretty much had one of the top contending teams just drop off, but it happened so late. I do wonder whether, you know, whether it was the Heat. I agree. I don't think Cleveland needed to do too much. I think they're pretty happy with their, you know, they did their big marquee signing in Mitchell in the offseason. But yeah, was it too late? We talked about at the start, like, was it too late for, you know, with the whole blockbuster KD, you only had, what, 13, 14 hours from that announcement to kind of get deals done. So yeah, it would be interesting. I don't know if it will come out as to whether the Miami front office were trying to, you know, just seeing the opportunity that actually now we expect Brooklyn to drop off, you know, that's one less sort of main competitor. So, you know, the East is diluted and there's a chance, but.
Well,
yeah,
the winner of the day was going to say, so the winner of the day was definitely second round picks because They're throwing them around like candy.
A lot of second round picks. People were just handing out second round picks, eh? Like,
everyone knows that Jokic is a second round pick. He's the 2-time current defending MVP, possibly favorite to win it in the third time, was pick number 41, second round. So, you know, everyone wants a piece of those second rounders.
Speaking of one thing before we go, I definitely don't mind it either. It's, you know, it's a lottery pick, whatever, you know, a bit of fun. One thing that was not fun, though, in the last 24 hours was Kyrie Irving saying that basically his trade was in the works after the first year, and he was unsure about whether he wanted to be in Brooklyn long term again because of things that were happening behind the scenes. Now, I'm not full blown. Go and listen to him, but I know, Si. It's good. I'm glad we don't have to think about him again.
He actually, I don't know if you guys caught much of the game. I didn't watch all of it, but I watched. He looked pretty good. Dallas, like, it just goes to show, and he's going to give the Dallas faithful some hope, because he's come in, literally been there what, a day or two, and just slotted into that team. I mean, Luka wasn't playing. They beat
Who were they playing again, Dave?
I think it was the Clippers.
It was the Clippers, and the Clippers are a pretty good defensive team, right? So, yeah. Well, and do you remember how many points Kyrie Irving got last night?
I thought it was 24, maybe. Could be wrong.
I think it was 24. So that's pretty impressive, because, like, putting up 24 points against, you know, any team like that, you know, a strong defensive Clipper team with Kawhi Leonard or something like that, it's pretty strong, which is exactly what our new favorite, we've never doubted, Cam Thomas did on Monday night in Brooklyn. He put up 47 points. Who needs Kyrie? I'm moving on. I love Cam Thomas now. I'm going to get a Cam Thomas signed jersey. We're moving on with our life as Brooklyn Nets fans.
Yeah. If you guys had to sum up, go, Simon.
I just feel like Kyrie could pretty much slot in anywhere, because he just plays his own game. He's a dribbler. He's ball in hand, so he sort of does his own thing. I do like the way that he's been there for like 3 days. He's already talked a lot of shit about the former franchise. He's deleted his apology tweet for that anti-Semitic video, so good stuff, Kyrie. And he's also implied that he probably wanted to go to the Lakers by saying, you know, I think his words were something along the lines of, like, you know, now I can't think about what could have happened or what should have happened, and I've just got to focus on Dallas. When he was asked about, with, you know, wanting to go and play with LeBron and the Lakers, so he sort of implied that maybe, you know, he hoped to go to the Lakers, which is not a great thing to say on your first day. But yeah, I think he'll have some great games for the Mavs, and he's probably going to provide a few headaches as well. So, but he's not out.
If you were to sum up the we'll call this the Nets tenure, the 2019 to 23 or 22, what would one word to describe that sort of era
flop
of the Nets? Would it be? Flop.
Yeah, flop. I would need two, and it'd be historic bust.
Historic flop.
I'd go with tumultuous, because there was, you know, there was a time, and it's been obviously talked about a lot.
Very few ups,
the big toe, and, you know, you're in the Eastern Finals against a Hawks team that was punching above its weight. You probably make the NBA Finals, so yeah, there definitely was definitely an era.
Definitely a team of what ifs, you know, like they were the highest record in the league, you know, last season. Then they obviously got bounced out, you know, after KD's injury. It kind of disastrous this year. KD gets injured again.
Do you think Kyrie would have requested a trade if KD had never got injured and we were like a game back of the Celtics?
I think KD wanted his contract. Yeah, I think KD wanted his guaranteed contract, and we were never going to do it. So, I mean, like, look, like you said, it's a Mavs headache now, and, you know, there's a strong chance Kyrie walks in the offseason and either goes to the Lakers or goes to the Suns. So, I mean, watch that space.
Yeah. excuse me. Should be fun. Should be fun to watch our Nets rebuild, and the rest of the NBA will be exciting to watch. Let's wrap up this trade deadline special edition 35. We've got the Super Bowl now this weekend. Super excited for that on Sunday night, and we will be back next week to wrap up that and talk about, I guess, the NFL offseason, which will be coming up and should be pretty exciting as well. So thanks for listening and tuning in, and have a great rest of your week.